Hi, Kayla.
Hi, Megan.
I'm excited today.
I know. This is going to be so fun.
I have family today. This is going to be so
Oh, my God. You're so
We've
great.
Met all of your family.
We have. We've met all of my family.
We get to meet some of my family.
Oh, my God. Wait. This is so exciting. I hadn't even realized that. We've never had any of your family members on the podcast.
Well, aside from Alec.
I mean, yeah. Aside from Alec. Your husband. That's true. But, like.
Yeah.
So, this is going to be fun. We have your brother-in-law on, right?
Yes, we do. And we're going to talk about something very interesting that I've been dying to talk about is what happens if you have the exact same design as someone.
Yes.
So, I'm looking forward to getting into this and how that manifests, how that works in human design.
I love it. I love it.
So are you ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Kayla Mason.
And I'm Megan Smith.
And this is Human Design in Real Time. I'm the founder and CEO of Kayla Care, and as an intuitive human design coach, I use human design to help you get to the root of what's holding you back from living the life you actually want to be living.
Human design is a map of your energetic DNA that uses a combination of ancient systems and modern science to help you understand how your energy shows up in the world.
On this podcast, we'll be talking with people from all walks of life about how their human design affects their lives and the lives of those around them.
To download a PDF of your own human design chart, all you need is your exact birth time, and you can go to kayla-care.com to download your own copy.
So let's get started.
Welcome back to the Human Design in Real Time podcast. Today, we welcome my brother-in-law, Nick Cherries.
Hello.
Nick is a 4-1 mental projector, and he is here to talk with us about being a twin with the exact same design as his brother, Greg. So welcome to our podcast, Nick.
Thanks, Megan. I'm so excited to be here. We've been trying to get this together for a while, I feel like.
Yeah,
I know.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad we made this work and made this happen. Because this is such a, like, I feel like we've brought this up a couple of times on the podcast before, like what it means to have the exact same design as somebody. Like if you were born at the same time as somebody else, you would have the same design. How does that work? So I'm really excited for you to share your experience with us being a twin, with my other brother-in-law, Greg. And but first, Kayla, can you tell us a little bit about Nick's design and why it's so unique?
Absolutely. So Nick is a 4-1 mental projector. And the way his design is set up, he literally only has defined his mind center and his throat, and the rest of the chart is undefined. So he's undefined in the crown and then undefined in his whole lower body. So what we know about in human design, any center that is defined is a place where you are emitting energy, where energy is coming out into that electromagnetic field. Any center that is undefined is a place where you are absorbing energy or letting energy pass through you. And you're not using that energy. You can't emit that energy yourself. So what's very interesting about this situation is that in general, when you have two people who have the same design, you're looking at the kind of energy that they emit is going to be very similar. The kind of energy that the way other people see them, the way that they interact with the world themselves. But the way that energy comes into them, the way that they absorb energy is going to be very different based on the people that they're around and based on the way that they absorb that energy. So what we're really looking at here is a conversation of epigenetics. So one of the things that we talk about in human design is how genetics are kind of part of creating the human design chart. So when we look at human designs, one of the things that pops up is that we often will inherit parts of our design from our grandparents. And there's this kind of like, you know, energetic concept of like we are here to parent our children are like our parents. And we are kind of in this space of having to first learn how to be with our parents and then be able to parent our children. So genetics is a big part of human design. Epigenetics are almost, I would say, arguably a little more so a part of human design, because anywhere in the human design chart where you have the propensity to absorb conditioning is a place where your epigenetics, so meaning the people who raised you, the society that you grew up in, the events that occurred, especially in your early life, can really make a difference in the way that you move through the world. So when we look at twins, two people who lived in the same household growing up, there is this concept that, well, wouldn't they be exactly the same if they have the same design and they emit the same energy and they, you know, have... But we know, anyone who knows a pair of twins knows that that's just not the case under most circumstances. And so this really gets into the nuances of what epigenetics really means, because you can go from, you know, the base level of either grew up in a house with parents who stayed together or parents who didn't stay together or whatever. But when you look at the actual like little nitty gritty of like, well, what was the relationship between one twin and a sibling versus another twin and a sibling? What was the relationship between the two? How did the two interact with each other? And how did their designs interact, creating a kind of environment that made maybe one twin feel more safe or less safe or whatever it was in the construct of that environment? So this is a very cool concept, and I'm excited to dive into it because I feel like we're going to get a little bit of like clarity on just kind of what it is like to have the same design as somebody else. Because this is not an experience that most of us get, you know? Like, there aren't a lot of us who are walking around hanging out with someone who was born at the exact same time as them, like, or a couple minutes or so earlier, you know?
or a few minutes apart. Yeah.
Negligible amount of time.
Negligible, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, Nick, can you tell us a little bit about your experience growing up with your twin, Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things, so I guess starting from the beginning, I think what happens, maybe this happens with a lot of twins, a lot of parents, and a lot of twins. I'm not sure if this is the case. I don't know if every mom tries to do that. But I think a lot of people, when they think of twins, they think, oh my God, they're so cute.
Yeah.
There's two of them and they look cute. And they're, because you start as a baby, right? Like, you're a baby when you start and they're very cute. You know, it's like, imagine getting two puppies instead of one. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you'd be thrilled. You know what I mean? So like, what the first thing you're going to try to do is, I mean, this sounds silly, and I know this may feel like a tangent, but the first thing you're going to try to do is dress them both up the same, yeah. Right? You're going to put up your fine matching outfits. You're going to find, you know what I mean? I think a lot of parents do that.
Yeah.
I think some...
100%.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it seems to me like growing up and meeting other twins and, you know, listening to other twins' experiences, it seems like there's a varying degree of how long that lasts, right? Like, there are twins that stay like wearing the same shirt and doing the exact same thing for a really long time. I don't think there's that many of them, to be honest, but like, there's sort of this, I imagine there's like a normal distribution of like, okay, like, does it start at three is when the, you know, the differentiation starts to really take hold? Is it when they're 10? You know what I mean? In our experience, I think our mom discovered pretty quickly that we didn't really want to have, you know what I mean, be in the same things all the time. I bet probably around, you know, six or seven is really when, you know, or even, you know, earlier than that, maybe three or four, mm-hmm. Where we really started to like diverge a little bit. Mm. You know what I mean? I will say that one of the first differences I think our parents noticed, and I actually hope we have this on a home video, is we have a home video. And Megan, you might have seen this before. It's when me and Greg are in a little kiddie pool. And I am splashing Greg. I'm trying to annoy him. I'm being disruptive. I'm being like an instigator, you know? And Greg, all Greg is doing, he's just organizing his little cups. He's got cups of water and they've got little superheroes on them. And he's organizing little cups. He's measuring the water. He's looking at them. You know, we're three. You know what I mean? We're so young in this video.
Oh my God.
And I'm just like trying to like bother him. And my brother, you can hear my dad in the background going, Nicholas, stop bothering your brother. You know what I mean? And it's my favorite thing to say. I love saying it. But it started early, right? Like, we were three or four. We were young, you know? And I think there are some sets of twins. It seems to me, like talking to other twins that have similar experiences, or twin, other twins. So they have like, you know, there's a varying degree of like when that started to happen, right? I think if you're a fraternal twin, Greg and I are fraternal, which is really bizarre because relative to my older brother and our older sister, you know, we look quite a bit different. We're not, you know, the same thing. Where Greg and I really take after my Puerto Rican father, and then my mom, I mean, so my sister and my brother really take after our Irish mother. So we look very similar. Like we almost could be identical, but we're not. There's like small differences, and it's a little bit strange. So I think, you know, there's a varying degree of like, you know, if you're fraternal twins, there's, well, maybe there's a little bit more similarity. Maybe that stays a little longer. But you're still, even identical twins, like, I know I can tell the difference. If people are identical twins, like you can really tell it. You can like, you can smell it, but like, you can like sort of sense it, from a little further away, like something's not exactly the same here. And I think that's sort of how life experience shapes us.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think parents, again, like I said, sort of find out pretty quickly whether or not that's going to keep going. Maybe some parents force it on them. And I think our mom was, I'm very thankful that she sort of like pulled back on that pretty quickly. It's like, okay, let's get them in overalls. Let's get a couple of pictures. And then, you know, now by the time they're 5 or 6, they can do their own thing. They can be their own person. I think, so further on, like, I think, you know, feeling like a twin is most palpable when you're in grade school, right? Like your elementary school, you're experiencing your first time away from your parents. You know, like when you're home with your family, it's very easy to feel like an individual, right? There's only 6, you know, we had a family of 6, you know, the 4 siblings and then our 2 parents, family of 6. It's easy to feel like an individual, like everyone knows like who you are, you know, and you have a really good relationship, you know, or at least, you know, there's just differentiation of personalities. But when you go to school, right, and you're walking around a classroom, like, that's not how you're viewed, right? You're viewed as a unit when you go to school, right? You're viewed as a part of a set. Mm. And there are advantages to that. There's disadvantages to that. And I think part of it, the advantage is that, you know, you walk through school, you go through your grade school experience, and you feel like you're not alone. You know, you're like, you've got somebody else there who's like experienced the same things. Like, if there's some weird issue, like, not that we really talked about it back then, because we didn't really have the articulation or like the, I guess, you know, we were just like poking at each other, like, hey, you took my toy, you know, like that was the level. But when we're 8, that's what your concerns are, right? They're not like the metaphysical implications of our relationship.
I'd be a little concerned if you were having those conversations.
Yes, yes. So would I. I was like, let's get a cigarette. You know what I mean? Like, so, but anyway, so like that's the advantage is that you always have someone with you who sort of experienced the same things. And it's not that you talk about it. It's not that you discuss it, but it's just, you know, you're not alone. It's just that thought, that comforting feeling. The other, I think the flip side of it is if, you know, you see your twin do something that you don't like, or maybe that you could see yourself doing, but for whatever reason, you just didn't make the decision to do it. There's a lot of like interesting self-loathing emotions that sort of come from that, because here's this person who looks exactly like me doing something I maybe would have done if I like flipped an unfair coin, like the 20% I would have done this thing, 80% not. But I could see myself doing it, and here they are doing the thing that I wouldn't have done. And I might see that and go like, oh, I just really wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have said that in that situation. I wouldn't have farted in the middle class. You know what I mean? Like just like things like that. I know it's silly, but like, it's true. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you see another person acting in a way that maybe, you know, you resisted or didn't resist or whatever.
That can be difficult. And then do you feel like you kind of feel like you're being judged because
100%, 100%,
and you are connected to this person.
Yeah, and absolutely. And it's really, and for us, you know, I think where the differences started to diverge is kind of started at the kiddie pool, you know, the little blow up pool. Was Greg was really into, he was super focused on what he was doing. He was not worried about external things, you know what I mean? And us being a unit, I remember growing up and feeling like I absorbed all of the awareness of, you know, reading a room, of like understanding my place and understanding my relationships with everybody else. Like, he was just like, whoop, it went right over his head. And it was almost my role to be like, wait, Greg, you can't fart there. You can't do this. You know what I mean? Like, it was up to me to like keep an out. I was the one like keeping an eye out for us. And he's the one just doing his thing. You know what I mean? And so that's where I think it started there. You know what I mean? And that, I think that little moment, you know, that one little like slice of time that was captured by that home video is actually incredibly telling, you know, and it was really so, and I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about it, it's coming out of my head. Yeah. Like these thoughts are coming together as they're coming out of my mouth. And it's really telling, I think. So it's interesting.
I'm curious if that, were you cognizant, like that home video, were you aware at the time that there was a difference?
Probably not at the time. Mm-hmm. I think where I really started to notice it was when I was 9. Alec maybe told you about this. We went to a summer camp, a sleepaway summer camp called Racket Lake. And it was not fun. We had a really terrible time. We went free. It was like a really expensive sleepaway camp, but we went because our principal at the school like recommended like our family for whatever reason to go, like, oh, you got this like scholarship, send someone who, you know, might enjoy a sleepaway camp, a sports camp. And we just didn't really have a good time. And I would say the other campers just really didn't like me and Greg for whatever reason. I don't know what it was, but they just like made fun of us a lot. And it was the first time like Greg was so good at just like, they roasted Greg like every day and me, but like, you know, it was tough for me to watch people just roast him. He's just like, la-di-da, doing whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I remember at the time, I couldn't tell if he's like absorbing it and just doing a phenomenal job at deflecting this energy and not letting it affect him, or he truly was like a little bit unaware of it. I'm inclined to think that it's sort of a mix, but I certainly was fully aware of like what was happening, and it was not fun. it was just like it was a really bad time. It's like honestly one of my worst memories, which is a little, you know, it's sad, but it is what it is. You know, and I think that was sort of the first time I like became, it was palpable that like I was aware and he wasn't, or there was just a difference in our experience.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's so interesting. And like getting to, because like when you look at that, one of the things that I have noticed with people who have a lot of undefined centers is that they can go either way. It's exactly what you're talking about. Either they're someone who absorbs absolutely everything and cannot stop worrying about the world around them, or they're someone who just completely lets everything roll off their chest as if, and I think this is, so before we got on, we were talking a little bit about, and I want to talk about this a bit now, the difference between a high vibrational, like, I don't want to say use, but like the way to utilize an undefined center in a high vibrational way is to literally allow that center to be a screen, as if it's a screen door, allowing energy to just pass through like a sieve, and then acknowledging that when you leave that room, that energy is now gone and you don't need to hold on to that energy anymore. Mm-hmm. Whereas the way that a lot of us experience our undefined centers is in this kind of lower vibrational, we absorb things. So instead of allowing the energy to flow through that screen door, we try to hold on to it. And then when it goes away, there's this sense of like, wait, where did it go? Like, that was mine. There's this, you know, like trying to identify with either the emotion or with the sense of identity or with this willpower concept or whatever it is, trying to identify with that energy and make it your own when you were really just meant to have it pass straight through you. And so I do wonder, I feel like, and I don't know if you would know what event this, like if something had happened, but like I feel like something probably happened before the kiddie pool incident that made it so that Greg was totally cool doing his own thing. He was, because so for anyone, any human design nerds out there, They both have one channel. The channel that they have is the 4323. It is the channel of structuring, the channel of innovative thinking. This is also called the genius freak channel. And so when someone is recognized and is doing the thing that is, you know, keeps them excited about the world and they're using the information they bring into their minds and expressing it into the world and they're being recognized and everyone is excited about it, they're in a really great place. And so in this story about the kiddie pool, Greg was sitting there and he was organizing his cups. He was very much like doing this organization. He was expressing, ah, look, I see all of these things and how they can be organized. And your parents were clearly giving him the space to do that. They were recognizing that this is something that he wanted to do and that he didn't want to be disturbed while he was doing this thing. And something, because you also could have been sitting on the other side of the pool, organizing your own cups. That could have been a thing that happened.
Oh, and did. Like, that happened plenty. I just, you know, there was times where I also wanted to bother him.
So like, yeah, like, and that's the thing that I'm curious about is like, do you feel like, did he do that to you? Did he try to bother you as well? Or do you feel like
Never.
It was...
Like really, that was so one-sided. And I think, you know, you talk about it, you know, your preference sort of an event that happened towards a kiddie pool. And I know this sounds kind of silly, or maybe it does, I don't know. But I was born 8 pounds, 8.5 pounds, and he was 5.5 pounds. Talk about like absorbing
wow.
things
yeah.
and Whoa. Letting things pass through you. You know what Damn. I mean? Like, I think it started real early. You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
yeah, because maybe my mom could tell you, you know what I mean? What maybe happened before that. But like, I know that the only thing I know about my life pre that, other than like, I went mm-hmm. to Disney World once, you know, and where I was born is really, you right. know, like I was born at a certain weight and it was quite a bit more than Greg. You know what I mean? I think that.
Wow.
I think those things have effect on you, you know, physically, you know what I mean? And further down mentally.
Yeah. I wonder, like, that almost sounds like it could be like a past life or like ancestral thing. Like maybe mm-hmm. you brought a certain amount of karma with you. And, you know, this is something that we actually had a podcast. My sister and my niece were both born 3 months apart from each other. We also had their mothers on recently. My older sister and my mother were pregnant at the same time. Whole fun experience. But they were born very close to each other. And we spoke to a Ouija board at one point and discovered that they had known each other in a past life. And that Sabrina had come through to take care of Brittany because she wow. felt so guilty about having not been able to save her in this past life. And so I wonder if that happens with twins as well. Yeah. And I wonder if maybe there was something that you literally took with you from a past life. And it was like, okay, like I need to hold all of the stuff so that Greg can be so that he can actually enjoy. Like maybe there's this part of you that felt right from the very beginning that you had to hold more, that you had yeah. to have more on your shoulders.
That is so crazy. That is really fascinating. The first thing that comes to mind when I think of that is like, if you could like map, like you could, it's impossible to do this because like date records just don't go back this far. But if you could like map out like every ancestor, their birth, their map and their birth times, all that stuff. You can add that exactly, had that for everybody. Like just that, you know, I'm thinking from a statistician standpoint, like it would be really cool
yeah.
to just
yeah.
like see what patterns you yeah. see. You know what I mean? Really. And like, and how does the,
so real. You know,
it is gets real, really real, 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 real quick. That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. I feel like I came in here thinking we were going to have a conversation about epigenetics. And I feel like the past life conversation is actually very relevant here. So if you were literally born 3 pounds heavier, that's yeah. just so, that's wild. Yep. That is wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, I am curious cool. to see, because you also mentioned at the camp, you were very aware and a cognizant of everybody else and what they were saying about you and Greg.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there was a point where you started to recognize mm-hmm. that you needed to take on this prior to that, like take on the responsibility of being aware for your brother. Did something happen earlier in your childhood for you to make that connection, or is that the camp situation the first time where you were like, I need to be aware for Greg?
I think I don't remember.
That's fair.
Nothing pokes out at me, at least in my memories, as a specific event. And I really feel like whether or not, maybe there was something that was subconscious that happened like prior to camp, right? Prior to that camp. But like, I think that camp was definitely the first time where I was like, okay, I feel like maybe I didn't like probably say this out loud or even think it out loud, I guess. But like, there was definitely like a part of me, I think, that was like, I think I need to be the, I think I'll take the wheel, you know what I mean? For a little bit here, really. And, you know, like, because he was just so, and part of it, and I think I was envious for sure, mm-hmm. because I wish I could have let that stuff roll off my back. And maybe part of me just knew I couldn't, you know what I mean? Knew that like, I just needed to have some kind of awareness. I don't, for better, for worse, you know, but that's kind of how it shook out.
So Nick, since you're a projector, in human design, we talk about how important recognition is for projectors. So with that in mind, how did you feel recognized as a child by your parents or by your peers? And did you notice any differences in how you were recognized versus how Greg was recognized?
That's interesting. I think... You know, like, I think the thing is as a twin, you sort of walk, like, you know, we kind of spoke about this before. It's like, you kind of like walk around like as a unit, right? Like, especially when you're experiencing grade school, you're experiencing everything, like you walk as a unit. And I think how you're recognized and how you're perceived, especially at the time, I don't know what, like, maybe, I don't know. It's not like twins are new or anything, but like, like, it seemed like at the time, I don't like, correct me, you know, it seemed like at the time, there was a little less like, it's bedside manner is not the right term for this, but there was a, like, there was so much of like, hey, you guys look alike. Do you want to switch places? I'm like, dude, listen, you know what I mean? Like, we've heard this. This is the same shtick. We've been hearing it for 9 years. We're sick of it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so I think our experience, the perception of twins, like just in general, like as a societal expectation, just kind of had this weird, there was just like a weird, like, you know, I think we're always viewed as a unit. I don't think it was hard for other people in the spaces we were in, like especially school, especially teachers, to view us like as separate entities. I think they were inclined to really think that we were very similar.
That's so hard.
It is. And I think, you know, but the thing is that what's nice about it is like Greg, you know, Greg was really good at school. And, you know, I did well in school also. I think teachers, in terms of recognition, at least, you know, if they have one of the, you know, one of the twins in the class, they know what to expect. They know they're going to get someone who's going to sit, pay attention, shut up, sit down and listen to the material and try to learn. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they knew they were going to get someone like that. They knew what to expect. So I think that, you know, you're definitely kind of placed in this bucket, you know, with teachers and peers and other things. And I would say mostly it's a good thing. You know what I mean? Especially if you have a positive relationship with those people. Obviously, if it's negative, then it compounds worse, right? Because any bad standard that, you know, your twin might, you know, exhibit is something that other people are going to expect from you too. So if you farted in class, you know what I mean? Farted in the middle of class. I know I keep going back and forth, but like if you have some sort of, you know, grade school faux pas, then, you know, you are like going to be made fun of or held to that same standard that your twin set. You know what I mean? So that's definitely like kind of how people receive us. Or received us at the time. I think now, like, it seems, at least maybe we're gotten older, our lives have diverged a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, one of the things about your design that's so unique, because not only are you mental projectors, and mental projectors make up like 1.2% of the population or something, but you're also four ones. And 4-1 is the most rare of the profile lines. So you guys are extremely unique humans. And like my partner is actually so funny. He's also a 4-1 mental projector. So wow. Yeah, apparently I attract 4-1 mental projectors. right. But he dealt with a lot of feeling very like alone in the world because nobody was even remotely like him. And to this day, like now he's gotten to the point where he's just, you know, saying, fuck it. Like, I'm going to be who I am and the world just has to deal with it. And like, this is the healthiest mentally he's ever been. But the thing is that when you are so vastly unique, it can be really difficult to feel like you fit in anywhere. So kind of having that twin and having this other person in the world who experiences the world exactly the way that you do, it's like, it's as if you were given this gift of here, you get to have a friend, even though you're probably never going to meet anybody else who looks at the world the way that you do. You have someone who looks at the world the way that you do. And like, what a gift.
It's so funny. It's so funny you say that. Like when I was in like middle school and early high school and a much more immature person, you know, Greg and I used to have this phrase and like, Greg and I'd be like, everyone else is so stupid. Right. Like, talking about this like terrible. Like, but like, that's exactly the kind of conversation you have. Like, everyone else is just really dumb.
You guys already knew how unique and interesting you were. Yeah. You're like, we don't need anybody else. Everybody else is stupid.
And it's so funny that you say that about EJ because, like, that's his name, right? PJ, right?
Yes, PJ. Yep.
Yes, of course. Okay.
Yeah. So.
So like, it's so funny you say that because that's like it's precisely it. Like we needed that because like we were different. I felt different. And I know a lot of people feel different, but I'm like, oh geez, my mind really works way different than like other people, I think.
Yes. It does. You know, so, it absolutely does.
So it's we had those conversations. We had like, and as sophomoric and immature as they were, it was like they just don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we
I
don't,
love it.
I don't like them.
I love right? it. And the other thing that I'm curious about is because we talked about the rest of the world, society, teachers, and I think that may have had a lot to do with the fact that the Parent Trap and what's it called? The Mary-Kate and Ashley one where they switched places literally came out right at the same time.
Movies, I think.
All of those. But what was it like with your parents and with your family members? Because I know you had discussed how like in the family, you were individuals and that was really the only place in the world where you felt like individuals. Mm-hmm. So what was recognition like from your parents and from your family members? And how is it different between the two of you?
I think like definitely, you know, growing up, like just again, like I go back to the analogy of the, you know, the blow up pool. But like, I think that those differences of me being like this kind of instigator, I'm constantly looking for some sort of comedy or some kind of comic relief or some sort of like entertainment at the expense of someone of Greg, maybe specifically, you know, because I can't, like, you can only punch down when you're a kid. Like, Alec was just way too strong. And Nicole was, you know, she's older. You know, I mean, it's just, there was just a maturity gap. Anyway, I think that perception and reception, I think, of us definitely sort of follow those lines. I was always sort of like this, like kind of complainy, immature, like instigator, you know, I'm always like, oh, I'm bored. You know what I mean? And Greg was always just kind of going with the flow and doing his own thing and following the rules. And I would do that too. Like I had moments of that. Like we definitely had a lot of similarities there, but like, I just had these moments where I'd sort of like come off in a tangent and, you know, get bored and want to cause a ruckus. Not a ruckus. I wouldn't say that. This behavior was only within the family. I can't emphasize that enough. Like when we were in school, we were like soldiers, like militant. Like if I didn't bring my homework, my brother and I, if we missed our homework, we'd be sobbing. in class. So this behavior that I had that was sort of divergent, like, was only within the six of us at home.
And were you reprimanded for that behavior?
Oh, 100%. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, that definitely, and I think, you know, sometimes I'd rope Greg into it and he would also get in trouble, you know? But yeah, I think sort of that difference sort of defined, I think, how our family saw us and how we were different in that space.
Interesting.
Kayla, what, I'm curious if you can sort of give us information in how that works with their design, especially, like, I find it very interesting that the home life is very different from school life. And I feel like that's what it is for a lot of kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so I'm just curious, like, how that shows in the, and how that shows up in human design.
Yeah. So the thing that happens at home, and this is where we talk about epigenetics, is that because you are in the same space for such an extended period of time, and it's through all of those formative years. So when we look at brainwave states, there are, I think it's 5 different brainwave states. And as you get older, you move into different brainwave state dominances. And each of those brainwave states is less and less suggestible, is what we say. So, like, the one that happens when you're a baby is called Delta. And that's where you are when you're, like, in deep unconscious sleep. So before the age of 2, you are in Delta brainwave state, which means that everything that happens in that state becomes what is true. So before the age of 2, you're literally learning what the world is. So anything that happens before that point, regardless of what it is or who said it, or, you know, you don't have any ability to look at the world with a discerning eye. Everything that happens around you becomes the way it is. Then when you move into the next brainwave dominance, then you move into theta. That is where, that's like REM sleep. So this is the dream world. This is fantasy. This is where your imagination takes hold. And that's between the ages of 2 and 8. So during that time, this is why during that time, we're so imaginative. We play games together. We do all kinds of, like, you know, we play aliens. We pretend to be astronauts. We, like, all sorts of things. And we truly are able to dive into that so easily because we're in this space. But what that also means is that you're in a very suggestible place. So still, you're not really able to discern. You're not really able to look at the world and say, hey, there's something wrong with that. You just take everything that comes in as the truth. So because you spend all of that time with your family, your understanding of what is true is entirely based on the people who lived in that house. And so the person you are when you are with them, kind of like, I find I have a specific role in my family, and that is the role that I play with my family. And it has taken me so long to not only identify what that role was, but to be able to start to break away from it so that I can actually have relationships with my family members separate from my role in the family. And, like, especially as projectors, we absorb so much. So I think that's a lot of what happens, is that the family life is where your world was created. It's not just a matter of, you know, like, this is a different room that I'm in. It's like, this is the truth. And then once you hit 8 years old, between 8 and 12, this is where you're in alpha. And the alpha brainwave state is the brainwave state that we are in when we're kind of daydreaming. And it's that space right before you fall asleep. So it's less suggestible than theta or delta, but it is still a kind of, like, you're beginning to question. You're beginning to be able to do some questioning. So between 8 and 12, which is when you're saying that core memory happened. And I think for a lot of us, that is the time. I know for me, I have a big core memory that happened when I was, like, 8 and a half. And it is right at that period where you start to say, okay, maybe things are different outside of this house. Like, maybe the world that I live in is a little different. So after 12, that's when we start to move into beta, which is what most adults are in for the majority of our waking hours. And this is when we start to be able to look at the world and say, you know what, I don't like that. And I don't want to do it that way. And that's why teenagers tend to be very, you know, like they rebel against their parents, because now they can find, exactly. They can finally say no. Before this point, everything was just the truth because their parents said it was the truth. And now all of a sudden, it's not just a matter of, you know, my parent, I don't want to do what my parents say. They literally now have the brain capability to say, what if that wasn't true? What if this thing you taught me wasn't true? So I think that's kind of what happens here with this concept of being in the family. And then because you guys have so much undefined space, being within that family unit is going to be something that you are absorbing from every single person in that household. And so your place in the family is going to be different based on every nuance within your relationship with your brother, relationship with your sister, relationship with your mom, relationship with your dad. And like, and then how you and Greg come together and discuss it later, you know? So I think that that is what I would say to that, is that because the family is where you learned how the world works, you're going to have a different relationship. Whereas when you go out into society, when you go out into the world, your family is, those are your people. That's like your tribe. They're the safe place. So if you have this other person who's part of the safe place, then you're going to try to stay in the safe place, like when you go out into the world, you know?
Yeah, I think the, what was I gonna say? I feel like the, when, what you said about the third, like from 8 to 12, I think really resonated with me, because that's when I started swimming. And swimming was a big, big turning point in my life. It's like really when I started to get a lot of confidence and understand, like, and kind of daydreaming like you do. I started thinking about like what my life could be like what if I swam really fast? What if I was really cool? You know what I mean? Like, it's like little things like that. Like, obviously you're 8 or 9, whatever, but like you start to see like, oh, this is a little path I can take, you know, that can be mine.
Yeah.
You know, I start to daydream about the things that I want to do, especially in the swimming space. That's really the place I honed in on.
Did Greg swim as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he did. Yep. Yep. So around the same time. I started before he did. You know, he was like into his books. Greg was reading the third Harry Potter when he was 7. Like, Greg was just like, I mean, that's a fat book.
You know what I mean? Wow.
Like, and it's like, you know, it's not like a tremendous reading level, but like for a 7-year-old, like, wow. You
for
know?
A 7-year-old? Yeah.
That's wow. Like, oof, yeah. You know, there's a picture I remember of Greg with his big old glasses reading a little chair, like a little chair at one of my swim meets when I was 8. And he's like, he's halfway through the 4th Harry Potter. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, no, like, what the heck? You know? I was oh my gosh, I never read a book that long. And he was just like,
I didn't know. I didn't know that you started swimming at different times. I thought that,
It's Alec and
that
I.
You started at the same time.
Yeah, Alec and I kind of started at the same time, because it was just the two of us. Like, Alec was 10, I was 8, you know? So it just made sense for us to both join at the same time. Anna and Sarah, like some of our really good friends, like got us into swimming. They were already swimming. We started at the same time, but then Greg was like almost 2 years later, really. Was a long time. It wasn't like right away.
What was that like for you? Did you enjoy that he came to join you, or did you feel like he was stealing your thunder? Like, did you like having that by yourself?
I love swimming. I still love swimming. Swimming defined my identity for so long. And I think one of the things I struggled with, you know, even when I was 9, I had so much like weird depression-y thoughts when I was younger. You know what I mean? It was really weird. It was like, who's this like 8-year-old with all this angst and like cigarette needing depression? It was so bizarre. You know, like, why is Nick so, like, you know, sad and angsty? Mm. And I started swimming, and it changed everything. And I think part of it was, like, I just didn't have my own space to express myself. Greg had his stuff. Like, Greg had his reading.
Yeah.
You know, Alec and Nicole were older and already had, you know, more defined personalities. They were becoming who they were. And I just, like, was lost. You know, I didn't really – I remember not wanting to wear any shirts with any words on them whatsoever, because I was just – I want it to be very nondescript, like just an idea of a person. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's
Wow. You know, so when we started swimming, like it really gave me this identity of like, this is me, this is mine. And I didn't mind it when Greg started because like I already knew, like by that time I was like, okay, no, I got this. Like this is my thing. If anyone wants to come into my territory, they better come correct. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's something Greg struggled with, right? Because I had this really successful thing going on swimming. And that really like hurtled forward. And then he, you know, wanted something to find him too. And that sort of started to happen a little later. And then obviously in college, and when we finally separated, is when he was really able to flourish. Like he swam, like we both swam very well in college, but he like really, he really like came into his own, I would say, in school. And I think it was just being away from me, you know, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just having his own space to thrive.
Well, what was college life like, or like even after college when you two finally separated from the family, separated from going to the same school and doing a lot of the same things, you finally had your own space. What was that like for you? And, you know, how did it change you and how you sort of move through the world? And did you see something similar happen to Greg in his space?
One of the most interesting memories from that, like on that topic of mine is I remember, so I went to school in Ohio and Greg went to school in Hoboken, New Jersey. And, you know, we're from Westchester. So, you know, Hoboken's much closer. And I remember my mom, we got all of our stuff, me and Greg's, we drove down to Stevens, dropped him off. And then we drove out to Ohio to drop me off. But when we dropped off Greg for the year, my mom is like sobbing. Like leaving Greg, but also like she's more sobbing at the time. It was really like that Greg and I weren't going to be together. Like she thought it was going to be an emotional moment for us. And we're just like,
I'll say bye.
You know? Yeah. It was
bye.
It wasn't even like bye. It was like, yeah, whatever. Bye. You know what I mean? Like it was so not the biggest deal. You know, we were very close. It's not that we weren't close. It's not that we didn't like have this incredible relationship and understanding. We just like did not see it as a big deal. We're just like, whatever, I'm gonna see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that was like that concept was so foreign and weird to my mom. But like for us it was like we didn't, and that's another that kind of harps on the same thing. Like we just think differently. Like we were very unique and understood only each other. We did not understand why it was a big deal. We were like, I don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. Like, whatever. I'll just see you later.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Like, well, it's funny because you guys both have totally open, undefined emotional centers.
Yeah.
Which essentially means that not only do you not create emotion, but you don't have any litmus through which to experience emotion except other people's emotions.
Right.
So it makes perfect sense that you would both just, you know, whatever, like, this is fine. And your mother likely has a defined emotional center and she's dealing with all of this tumultuous, like my babies, and, like, you know, 100%. So, 100%. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. So, I think that really defined it. So I think, you know, we were both very excited because obviously we loved, it was nice to do, you know, to be together. We were very, like, by the time we finished high school, Greg and I were extremely close. And really had a lot of inside jokes that no one else understand and giggling about things.
We still don't understand. At least I don't.
Like we just move at our, you know, our jokes and our inside, like all our banter just moves at a breakneck pace. And we choose to let people in if we want to. You know what I mean? And if they're very, they're so lucky to join our little ride with us.
Yeah.
You know?
My God, I love it.
It was such a surreal experience meeting you two for the first time because, like, you know, they talk about twinish, and twinish is very real. You guys like finish each other's thoughts, and just watching you two to converse was like, what is going on?
Oh, yeah, it's so a little funny. Like
when people meet because they meet me, you know, and they meet, you know, they meet me, and then they realize there's another person who's just like this. You know what I mean? It's like, holy crap, that's a lot. You know what I mean? So we're just going to go on our own and do our little twinish thing over here. And, you don't have to be a part of it.
Yeah. Now I totally know the difference between you two, and yes. I get it so much more because it's been like 10 right. years. But yeah. like the first meeting was like a
whoa. It is. And I think for a lot of people, it's like that. You know, it's just mm-hmm. a little
over. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we were both excited. I think on that note, we were just both very excited to sort of have our own space to do things. We're finally not going to be, you know, perceived as a unit. You know, I'm going to do my thing, and he's going to do his thing. And that's why I think he, especially in swimming, just athletically, like he just really, like we both, again, they both did really well, but he really flourished in school, just being away from me.
Do you guys still talk every day?
Oh, no, we don't. No. We talk like, but the thing is, you know, again, like it's the same thing. If like there's no pleasantries when I pick up the phone with him.
Yeah.
It's Greg, what was that thing with SpongeBob again? Okay, bye. You know what I mean? Like there's no like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Like sometimes we'll like kind of like it'll just sort of be a stream of consciousness. Like, I want to talk about Drag Race now. I want to talk about this now. You know what I mean? Like just like random stuff like that. But there, you know, a lot of the times there aren't any pleasantries. I'll just pick up the phone and be like, Greg, remember that one joke from SpongeBob? Greg, remember that thing on Bob's Burgers? Oh, this funny thing happened in the bay. Can I send you this meme? Like, just like immediate into the conversation. There's no, just like, oh, yeah, click, you know? And that's just been, I think, you know, ever since we separated on that day, you know, in a more permanent sense. Oh,
I love that. Yeah. And I feel like similar to what we were talking about before, where it's like you have this other person in the world who is mm-hmm. like you, even though nobody else is like you. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like you're, the fact that you both understand each other so deeply is a form of recognition. And like you feel recognized by your brother at any given moment.
Yeah.
Like you always feel that invitation, because that's another thing with projectors is we need to wait for invitations. We need to wait for somebody else to kind of invite us into something, for someone else to say, hey, I want your opinion, you know. But I feel like because of the relationship that you have with your twin, it's like it's an open invitation. It's like you're kind of always being invited into that space. You're always recognizing each other just by existing. It's kind of this beautiful, like, mm-hmm. it sounds like a dream for any projector.
He definitely occupies, I will say, he definitely occupies like a space in my head. And mm-hmm. and both of us, and Megan knows this well, I think. But with my dad, my father, Greg and I take after our father. Like I look exactly like my dad, like exactly at his age.
Yeah.
And it's something I wear with pride. I love looking like my dad. Now I have the mustache to match. It's wonderful. I even work in the same, so I live in Ossining. He used to live in Ossining, and I work in Jersey City where he used to work. Like not the same company, but like really, I'm doing like a let's play of my dad's life, and it's just great.
That's so great.
It's so funny. What's interesting is our father talks to himself out loud. He does the same exact thing. And I know that's where I get it from. Greg does that too. Our thoughts exist outside
super
of
super in design for you guys also, by the way.
100%.
Super in design.
And like, we're both just thinking out loud all the time. And mm-hmm. part of Greg sort of occupies this little space in my brain. And the way that sort of comes to fruition a little bit is like when I'm talking, I'm kind of talking to him a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm imagining saying these things to Greg. I'm imagining like, oh, wouldn't that be really funny? You know what I mean? Especially if I'm thinking of jokes. Like Greg and I are like a workshop of jokes. Like we're just constantly workshopping, what is this? What's the fun? How could there's this joke? It's really funny. How can we make it funnier? And it's this sort of this informal like process that happens. It's kind of like, you know, building blocks in kindergarten. We're just like, okay, try this. And like, it really is like, I mean, if we're comedians, we'd be very successful, but I don't know if I'm going to do that. but it's because of this, like, you know, constant banter, but also me, you know, and both of us being independent and thinking, oh, that's really funny. What would Greg think of this? And that's where it sometimes results in the phone call. Greg, I thought of something. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's so great.
And I just want to make sure you heard it.
Oh my God, I love that.
Because he's going to think it's exactly as funny as I do. You know.
I like one of the things that I love about talking to someone about their design is kind of hearing the way they're already living their design. And mm-hmm. like one of the things that is amazing for mental projectors specifically, especially when you have a defined throat, is talking to yourself. Because like the concept of making decisions is difficult for mental projectors because they don't, you don't have anything in your body to help you make a decision. Essentially, you're just kind of organizing information and then waiting for things to come to you and being ready for whatever it is to come in. It's much more similar to a reflector experience, actually. So, but with that defined throat, you are able to talk things out loud to kind of just hear them in the world. And like, if you just talk it out and kind of, you can often find your way to where you need to go just by talking to yourself or talking to somebody else. And so like, I love that you kind of have this constant conversation going on with your twin.
Yeah.
And that's just so beautiful. Such an aligned situation.
I think it is. And it definitely, I think most of the time for us, it sort of filters through the lens. It's sort of coming through the lens of like humor. You know what I mean? Like that's sort of this constant banter, you know, and I think it's interesting. There's a lot of, and I think in our family in general, like there's a lot of like the important things are understood, but not said. Mm-hmm. Like there's just, there's like, you could say like, oh, we don't need like, oh, it's not that we don't need to talk to them. Maybe we do need to talk about them, but like a lot of like important things go unsaid. And there's sort of like this, like, I want to say like mental communication almost of like, yeah, we understand this is a big deal. We understand that we're upset about this thing. We don't need to like harp on it, you know? And really our communication is really like centered around like what, how can we make this as funny as possible? <You know? laughs> Like, what is going to maximize the laughs? Because this is literally great. And I find myself, you know, now that I spend my, you know, now that I've been living, you know, closer to home and I've been finding that having that with Alec a little bit more too, but with Greg, you know, it's always going to be like
right there.
Yeah. Right there. And there's so little you have to communicate to understand.
Yeah.
Like I never have to explain a joke. You know what I mean? Like he always
right away. Yep.
You know,
one other thing that I'm actually curious about, and I know we're coming up on time, but one other thing I'm curious about, because when we are similar people, the thing that I think often comes up is on the one hand, you're going to be able to be in synergy together. On the other hand, there might be competition. There might be spaces of like headbutting. So I'm curious if that's something that you guys have ever experienced, especially because you have defined mind and throat centers with your self-expression and with the things you believe to be true. I'm curious if there was ever, or if maybe as you've gotten older, it has changed, if there has been any competition or kind of butting of heads having the same design.
Yeah, 100%. Like, absolutely. Like, I think we've done that our whole life. Like, I think there's just been moments here and there that have just been like, you know what I mean? And it gets really ugly. I gotta be honest, it gets really ugly. When Greg and I are mad at each other, it's bad. And that's just been a theme our whole life. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we would get into brawls when we were like 5 and we get into shouting matches when we're 25. You know what I mean? Like that's absolutely, it mostly revolves around him snoring. You know what I mean? I can no longer spend a night in the same like room as him. Like, if we get we used to do a lot, we still do a lot of road trips.
It's really bad.
We have to get I have to have earplugs or head, like, I can't, if we get a hotel room and he's just in, you know, we got 2 beds, because he's in another bed. Like, oh my God, it sounds like there's a wildebeest sleeping. And I know probably someone's
not,
but he just falls right asleep. And I'm just like awake.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? This is another going back to the adrenaline thing, right? Like, I'm the one worrying about everything. He just like clock out, you know?
Yeah, he's just and like, nope. Yeah.
So like, you know, there's just been moments. Like, I tried to, like, I'll give an example. Like, you know, a few years ago, we were driving him out to California to move out there. He lives in San Diego now. And we were in Arizona and he was like snoring really bad. And he snores so bad, like it sounded like sleep. I remember looking this up. I'm like, does my brother have sleep apnea? You know what I mean? And he would like, he's like snoring. You know what I mean? And he would like not breathe for 5 or 6 seconds. And I'm like, Greg, I'm a little, like, I remember the next morning. I was like, Greg, I think you might have sleep apnea. I'm a little concerned because there were moments last night where you were not breathing for like 10
yeah.
seconds.
Yeah.
And it's not okay. And he got so mad. He gets very defensive about it. And it's just a couple, there's things like that, that like, you know, yeah. I have to be very, very like careful about what I say. You know, and I think there's just certain things that I think tend to, and my nerves too, like there's things that get on my nerves, things that get on his nerves. And I think that just goes with siblings anywhere, but like there's definitely, yeah. I think with us, if it gets bad, it gets really bad. And, you know, I'm, yeah. as we get older and he's living on the other side of the country for longer, I think I'm becoming increasingly cognizant of like, you know, I want to make sure I'm not, if I can, you know, cause I've made that mistake in the past. I think I've made the mistake where I've like pressed too hard where I'm like, don't you, can't you see it my way? I don't understand how you don't see it my way. We have the same fucking brain. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I do not see it my way. Like, I don't get it. Like we're the same
yeah.
person. It doesn't make any
yeah.
sense. You think it differently than me. And I remember, I just find it so frustrating. You know,
I mean, you do, the two of you do turn it around pretty quickly, or are able yes. to brush it yes. off pretty quick. Like I've seen you two fight yes. and then like an hour later, you guys are back
yeah.
to
it's a
joking and cracking silly jokes and inside jokes and things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. It definitely, I, yeah, that's definitely happened a lot. And I think there's a level of face saving, I think, that happens like especially really early on after something like that, like we'll still be, it'll still feel, but like we know we have to, like if we're in a space of mixed company, like I can't, we don't want to make, we don't diffuse this to anyone else because no one else deserves that kind of negativity in the space, like that stays with us. We're not gonna like let other people have to experience that. That's not fair. You know, and I think that's something we both share, is like this understanding, like,
yeah.
Okay, if we're having an argument or disagreement, that's about us two. And no one, like, we would get so mad if we were fighting and someone else intervened. Like, fuck off. Like, let us do a thing. This is under control. You need to go sit down and we're going to work this out. Okay. Like, you do something, go yep. play on your, you know, go play video games for a little bit. Like,
yeah.
like just leave us alone and we're going to figure this out. You know, I know it yeah. looks heated, I know it looks a little scary, but like, just leave us alone. We get so mad. That, oh,
yeah,
that made me so
oh, that's
mad.
So funny. That makes a lot of sense too with your open space, because like, if someone else comes in, it might be creating a throat motor, and the not self theme of a throat motor is yeah. anger.
Yeah.
So if someone comes in and it's either bringing emotional energy or is bringing this anger energy or something with them into the space, it's going to amplify the situation. Whereas if the two of you are working on it yourself, I actually have a friend who described when two people with undefined emotional centers are having an argument, a lot of times it's like ping pong. It's like you're kind of throwing the emotion back and forth at each other, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until like she and her husband were like, you know what? Like they'll now just like stop and be like, okay, this, where did this come from? This is not ours. Why, where did it come from? Why are we throwing it back and forth?
Bouncing back and forth between them, right? And it's just sort of
right.
this cyclone that they're just playing ping pong with.
Exactly.
Mm. Wow. Well, this was enlightening.
Yeah. This was such a cool conversation.
I feel like I know you better too, which, you know, I've known you for 10 right. years. So it's like, oh, wow. Okay. I know you even better now. No, this was wonderful. Nick, thank you so much for being on
yeah,
the podcast.
This was
and
a lot of fun.
Being open and honest and sharing
Absolutely.
Your experience
Absolutely.
With us.
I really appreciate you giving me the time to, and space to learn a little bit and taking so much time with me tonight. It's been a lot of fun.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome.
This is such a cool concept. And I feel like we love diving into the way human design shows up in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those things that like is so, it doesn't come up very often. Like the whole, mm-hmm. you know, my whole concept with human design is celebrating the uniqueness of you, you know,
mm-hmm.
but what happens when your design is not unique? And I feel like we just like this conversation was such a beautiful exploration into what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for being so open.
Absolutely.
And I think it proved that you can still find uniqueness in similarity too,
100%.
Like you and Greg are very different, mm-hmm. and it's still really, you know, really cool to see you guys be yourselves, even though you share so much mm-hmm. similarities.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome,
amazing.
If you like what you heard on this podcast, follow us on Instagram at Human Design in Real Time to keep up with our next episodes.
And if you want to learn more about your own human design, I'd love to help you on your journey. You can head to my website, kayla-care.com, to book an introductory human design session where we'll dive into the person you were born to be. That's kayla-care.com.
We're always looking for awesome humans to be guests on the podcast. So if you'd like to be interviewed, send us an email at humandesigninrealtime@gmail.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Kayla Care. A big thank you to our amazing producer, sound mixer, designer, and editor, Sabrina Mason. Thank you to the composers of our theme song, Niall Spaulding and Sabrina Mason. Thank you to today's guests for being open and present with us.
And thanks to you, our listeners, for supporting this podcast. Keep discovering your
human design in real time.